Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our daily lives. 411 Team, where conversations matters. The Politics Rep Team from James S. Rickards High School International Baccalaureate IB program is a regular feature of 411 Team. The team brings together dynamic blend of voices, perspectives, and ideologies. These students critically examine and discuss a wide range of political issues and events at the local, state, and national level. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via the Zoom platform, I welcome members of the 411 Team Politics Rep. I will start with the student producers. Will you introduce yourselves?
Hi, everyone. My name is Kaylee John, and I'm a current sophomore at James S. Rickards High School, and I'm currently a teen producer for 411 Team.
Okay.
This winter break, I'm looking forward to our Christmas performance at our church.
Jahashua.
Hey, everyone. My name is Hasra Akula, and I'm also a student producer of 411 Teen. This winter break, I don't really have anything planned so far, but my parents do plan on going somewhere, so maybe we'll be going to our cousin's house, but yeah.
Okay, Amag.
Hey, guys. I'm Amag Acharya. I'm a senior at James S. Rickards High School, and I'm also a student producer for the 411 Teen Club. And this winter break, I'll be busy with college apps, so it'll be fun.
Yeah. Ishana.
Hi, everyone. My name's Ishana. So far for my winter break, I have nothing planned, but right now I'm trying to study up for my midterms and pass them with at least like a 90 or something.
Okay. Naina?
Hi, I'm Naina Vimreddy. I'm a current junior at James S. Rickards High School. And for winter break, I have plans of just going on a road trip, probably visiting our cousins or sightseeing.
Sounds good. And Angelina.
Hi, I'm Angelina. For this school year, I'm a sophomore at James S. Rickards High School. And for this winter break, I'm thinking of going on many trips and hikes and to build up my stamina.
Well, welcome all of you to 411 Team. You know, it's always a good time when I have you here to talk with you. Florida, historically, is one of the states with the highest number of death row inmates. It has been plagued with decades of controversy. Sentencing laws, governor discretion, jury recommendation, execution methods, in addition to a recent policy, for example, of lowering the jury threshold from unanimous to 8-4 for the death sentence. We're going to explore that this hour. My first question to you is, when you hear death penalty, what ideas or emotions does it evoke? And Kaylee, I'll start with you. We'll just, anyone who feels free, you know, join the conversation. But Kaylee, you're in the hot seat since you're a student producer.
Okay, so when I hear death penalty, I guess it first starts off with a moment of shock, but then it goes into fear. It makes me think about what could they possibly have done? Like, what could someone possibly do that would cause them to have to go through with that? But then I think about, sometimes I forget that when America says death penalty, these people actually die. Because in a country like Korea, they say death penalty, but then they don't kill them. It's just, they just say it. And then I think about America, and then I think about, oh yeah, they actually, you know, give them the shots. They actually kill the inmates. And I guess at that point, when I finally understand and I look up and I research about what these people did, I understand to an extent, like, why people thought that they needed to be sentenced to this. But I guess overall, it's really a question of, I don't know. Sometimes I guess I don't understand why these people did what they did in the first place, but I'm sure that's why they're being sentenced at all.
Okay. All right. Shana.
Okay. So like Kaylee said, there's obviously a reason why people are sentenced to the death penalty. And when I think about it, it depends on the context, really, because whenever I'm reading about it online and somebody has the death penalty, it doesn't really affect me in any way, so I feel indifferent. But and then whenever somebody says or starts the argument that the death penalty should not be invoked and they cite the Eighth Amendment, which says no cruel or unusual punishment, there's something different because for me, I'm more of a eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth person. Mm-hmm. So if somebody does something really bad, like killing a person, I feel like maybe like I feel like that's an extreme. But I feel like they should have sentenced to something that's similar. And for many people, that's the death penalty because you kill somebody, you get killed in return. So I feel like it just depends on the context, but in reality, the death penalty is, I feel like it's more excessive nowadays with the amount of crimes happening, but it could also be justified in a way.
Okay.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind when I think of death penalty is sort of like, oh, this person must have had to commit the most heinous crime ever. Like a case that I typically think about is like the Lisa McVeigh case where it was, I'm pretty sure her rapist was also put on death row. That's something that like frequently comes to mind when I think of death penalty. But sometimes I also think of like cases where the death penalty couldn't have been invoked. Like even though that person has committed such a heinous crime, they've just put that person on life row sentence, or just like that person is a person of power, even though they've committed such a heinous crime, but they've only gotten off with this amount of time in jail. But there's also cases where the death penalty has been issued, but it shouldn't have been, in my opinion. So it just, it invokes a whole sense of controversy in me.
Yeah, the death penalty to me is almost like, it leads me to the first question of, did this person actually deserve it? Because I feel like there's such a variety of crimes that receive the death penalty. And actually, one of the first people I think of is Ted Bundy, because I'm thinking like serial killer, killed so many people and harmed so many people. But then I can also think of other crimes that weren't the same that probably received the death penalty, or even people who are wrongly executed that happened to just be in that position and then later proved unguilty in life, and what their families have to go through when they watch their a family member get killed right in front of them on purpose with a lethal injection or an electrical chair or electrocuting chair.
Right. All right. Okay. Mog, I always want to hear your opinion. You're our resident senior.
Yeah, I guess I'm Unk. So okay, what was I saying? Well, yeah, so I think Nina brings up a good point on like how we have to be, the thing about death penalty is that we have to be absolutely sure that this person is the like not innocent, because there have been cases where it is innocent people and they're wrongfully executed. And I think overall with the death penalty, there's two sides to this, because there's a side of preventing people from doing the crime in the future, because if the death penalty is an option, then people are less likely to commit that crime. But then there's also the side of like, is this humane? Are we going to go the route of an eye for an eye, or do we want to help prisoners rehabilitate and maybe contribute to the society in the future? So like it's complicated, but I think there is a time and place for the death penalty, especially with very like with crimes such as like mass murder, things like that. It's in some cases it might be impossible to rehabilitate the inmate, and that can seem like the only option, especially for families looking for closure for their victims.
Okay. Angelina, where do you sit on this?
I also agree with many of you guys when you guys talk about the context and stuff like that. But when I first thought about death penalty, I thought about the abundance of crimes that the suspect or the offender has done. I don't really think about the crimes that they've done first. I've thought about how much that they have done and how many people that they have caused harm to. And I thought about how, like, that it could also be barbaric, since there can also be innocent people who has been affected and also be convicted wrongly. But I also, that's why I think about the abundance first before just like saying that someone has done this one bad thing, instead of saying someone has done like many things. Mm-hmm. Like there's like many evidence of them doing many things.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, just for your information, Florida has executed more than 120 individuals since 1976, and just this year, 2025, they have executed 18. However, the death row population here in Florida is one of the largest in the nation. Recent years, we've just seen an uptick of signed death warrants. So just to be aware of that. You all raised a number of issues. In 2023, legislation was passed that allowed the death penalty to be sought in cases of sexual battery against a child under the age of 12. So, and also in 2023, the jury now must have at least 8 out of 12 votes to recommend the death sentence. Previously, it was a unanimous jury that was required. If a jury recommends a death sentence, the judge, I guess, can choose to impose death sentence or a life sentence. The primary method is lethal injection. There is electrocution, I think, what is the chair called, old Sharky, by the electric chair. And the Florida statute 922.105 states that if either lethal injection or electrocution is declared unconstitutional, then the death sentence will be carried out by any constitutional method. I just wanted to share this with you. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the death penalty. You tuned in to 411 Team. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is the Politics Wrap session. We are talking about the Florida death penalty, and the question I pose to you all is, should life or death decisions be unanimous, or can we just go with 8-4? And what happens to the 4 who didn't agree or who said the person was innocent? We're going to look at sentencing. So what do you think? Should it be unanimous? It's been changed, admittedly, but do you think that it should be unanimous, or just having 8 votes is good enough to put someone to death? And I'll just take you, you know, whoever wants to speak. You don't have to go in any particular order.
I think it is quite a difficult topic, but in general terms, I do believe that there are exceptions, including the fact, like someone brought up earlier, what if they aren't like the actual person who did it, who committed the crime? But I feel like that's kind of a special scenario in terms of a typical setting where individuals are sure that this individual did commit the crime, and it's just a matter of, is the death penalty necessary? I think that the 8-4 is, it's pretty valid, just because I do think that if majority of the people on the jury believe that that individual is somehow like a terror or a source of fear to people, then I do believe that they would have a good judgment. If it was like, oh, they have to have four people say, oh yeah, I think this person deserves the death penalty, and eight people could say no, then I think there is a problem. But if majority of the population, majority of the representative population is saying that there is definitely an issue, I do believe that that is still valid, just because I think that the other four people that say no could, one, think that their crime is not that big of a deal, but also I think that some people sympathize a lot, and sometimes they sympathize a little too much, and they think about, oh, but this is still a person. But if you put it like that, then nobody is going to get the death penalty because everyone is a person. It is a matter of, oh yeah, they're a person, but did they act like one, or were they acting like an animal?
Okay. All right. Other comments? Are we here for someone else?
Yeah. I really agree with that, because there's always going to be someone. These are people who don't hear all crimes all day. Like, these will be people who are just there to see one crime out of their day. And I feel like if it comes to the point where someone is saying, oh, it's not okay to put the death penalty for this person because they deserve a second chance, or they deserve another type of punishment. Yes, the death penalty is irreversible, but also the actions that the person has committed is also irreversible. And if someone is trying to say that the person can change, the person changing doesn't validate for the fact that they've messed up or harmed a bunch of other people's lives, or even if it was one really important person's life. And it can also it's more fair to have this type of decision, because it makes it so that it's kind of a lot harder to come to a unanimous decision where every single person agrees. There's always going to be a disagreeing person. And at that point, it'll lead to no death penalty at all. Because if everything has to be unanimous, it is a lot harder to get people to agree with you, unless it's the obvious choice to give the death penalty.
Okay. Another perspective. Somebody else share where they're coming from.
Yeah, personally, I feel like it should be unanimous, since the death penalty is such a controversial and sensitive issue. Like, I feel that it should be, the death penalty should only be brought up in court if it feels like the case is, like, the inmate itself, the person who they're trying to give the death penalty to, seems like they're on a path of no return. Like, the crimes that they've committed go along mass murder or straight up terrorism, or like any big issues like that. And even though, like, as Kaylee and Nina both said, that people who are being brought into court to assess these cases have, like, you know, they're not typically in court that much, so they're for jury duty and everything. It seemed like, that's why it's just such a controversial issue to discuss in the first place. But it seems like the people who are being selected for cases that are of such a high intense issue, they need to take it into account of, you know, is this inmate on the path of return? Do they think that, you know, this is, like, this person is somewhat salvageable? Because it seems like in a court setting, it's not really like they could tell by looking at the inmate or anything like that, but just hearing more describing details of the case. And while I do sympathize, like, with the reason why the ratio was changed, I still somehow am set that the decision should be unanimous, even though there is factors where people wouldn't agree. I feel that it should be unanimous because the death penalty is, like, an issue where, even though that person, like, the crimes that they committed could have been those people not coming back, it still feels like the person who's being put under the death penalty is also, like, they're also under the same circumstance, but there's also, like, scenarios where the best alternative is just a lifelong sentence for them as well.
Okay. All right. Who else?
Share
your thoughts.
Okay. Sorry.
So I still, even though the unanimous, having a unanimous jury decision would be beneficial, I feel like the 8-4, 8-4 one is the newer one is better because of the fact that there's always going to be outliers in anything. There's going to be some people that, even though the facts might hit them straight in the head, they still won't agree to it. They still won't agree to like what everyone else is saying, what majority is saying. And with that, many people already have said that it's hard to get unanimous decision, but even when the objective facts are right there, it's kind of many people still don't choose to follow it, and they don't necessarily agree with it. Because, for example, pretty sure I don't know about the jury case for Jeffrey Dahmer, but Jeffrey Dahmer committed some heinous crimes. But even then, he was just sentenced to jail, and then he eventually did die in jail because of something else that was completely unrelated. But even though he committed some serious macabre crimes and murders, he was still not properly, he was never given the death sentence. And I don't know about the jury details for that one, but if it was because of the unanimous decision, then it's kind of proves my point that outliers are always gonna like mess it up somehow.
Okay.
I think for me, I'm leaning more towards the 8-4 vote because like as people have said, like there's always going to be some people that may think differently and they may like try to sympathize. But the thing is like these people they weren't I'm actually yeah they weren't there of like the in the event of the crime, and they don't really, some people can't really understand like the true impact that crime could have, not only on like the victims, but like any witnesses, family members, things like that. And it's such like a, there's so many layers to this where it affects so many people, and some people just can't, like, they can't grasp that concept, and they may try to sympathize with the prisoner. And say like, oh, there's a chance for rehabilitation. But in that moment, that prisoner wasn't acting humane. They were like out of control. This isn't someone that we should really humanize if in that moment they weren't acting human, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I
So
hear you.
I think that's why I lean more towards the 8-10 or 8-4 vote.
Okay.
I feel like I agree more with the unanimous vote because even if the suspect has done many, many crimes, the jury can still give them a life sentence, which they can die in either too. But I also feel like some people might not feel like that's enough, but like it's better than wrongly accusing someone and then immediately like send them off. So I feel like there's also like a chance for them to like for other people to find out what actually happened before immediately sending them off to the death penalty. So I feel like more time gives like better judgments and stuff.
Okay. Anyone else? Is that it? Okay, now I'm going to throw a little wrench in what you all had to say. Florida has had 30 exonerations since 1973. Research shows racial patterns in sentencing, especially when the victim is white. Geographic disparities exist here in the state of Florida. A small number of counties drive most of the death sentences. Duval, Miami-Dade, and Hillsborough. For every three people executed in Florida, one has been exonerated. How should a state reconcile continuing to execute people while exonerations are so high? That's my next question to you. Kaylee, I'll start with you since you all are slow to respond. But, you know, now I understand that you're saying, you know, they've done some heinous crimes and they deserve, and they can't be rehabilitated or whatever. But what about those 30 who are exonerated? And really, when they investigated it and reinvestigated, found that they, even though they were found guilty, didn't do it. Kaylee, what do you think?
Okay, well, I guess this nullifies my statement earlier about how if they're certain that the person did it, then they, like, the 8-4 vote makes sense. You said it's 1 in every 3 that get exonerated.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what for every 3 executed, 1 mm-hmm. has been exonerated. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You asked us how they could possibly make that better, like reconcile uh-huh. for it. But I don't think that they can at that, like, the rate is too high. Even if it was 1 person, like 1 every 10, I still think that that rate is too high, especially because we're saying that they're executing so many more people lately. The risk factor is not worth it, especially like when we say, oh yeah, this isn't reversible. Like when Nina was saying earlier, yeah, it isn't reversible. Like what they did is also not reversible. I completely agree. But I think but once they are at a point where they're able to find that it has been exonerated, then that just shows me that you guys could have investigated more. Mm-hmm. You guys weren't sure. So if you weren't sure, why did you make them go to court with that like limited information? You knew that there was more information to be found. That's why you were still investigating. That's why you ended up knowing, finding out that this individual was innocent. So why did you let it get to that point in the first place? You know what I mean? Like there's nothing after the fact, there is nothing you can do to make that up because exactly. You just took yeah. someone's life and you can't bring them back. The only thing you can do at that point is you're not making it up for those people. Like forever and ever, you should 100% until the moment that you yourself close your eyes, you should feel bad and you should feel apologetic. But in order to, I guess, kind of make it better for the people in the future, you still need to make that effort to make sure that, okay, like there's absolutely no more information that I think I could find. Like this is the end of the case. I can't investigate anymore. That is the point where I think, okay, now we can execute them because now I am 100% sure that we aren't punishing someone. We aren't mm-hmm. giving someone a sentence for something that they didn't do in the first place.
Okay. Other comments? Ahmad.
Okay, so you said 1 in 3 were exonerated?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that is pretty insane. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But I think like as Kaylee was saying, that goes to show that like a lot of these cases aren't fully like resolved. There's right. probably like a small part of it that's still going on and they're still taking this to court and they're still proceeding with the case. I feel like if they're going to get to that point, they should inform like the jury that this case is still going on. And perhaps like they need to take into account that there's still like pieces of evidence that are left unclear. And like, hopefully like at least providing this information and providing this warning beforehand can deter the jury from making absolute judgments and like moving towards the death penalty. Absolutely. Because I feel like that would only be an option if they're absolutely sure. And if they're not, they need to make that clear.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually agree. I think most exonerations are happening after the DNA evidence becomes available. So mm-hmm. I feel like
that's true.
That they should only get to that. They should only get to that conviction as long as every single person in that courtroom understands what evidence is put in place and what evidence they don't have. And it also shows that, yes, the system is not perfect. There's always going to be mistakes. And the death penalty will always be something risky. But there's still systematic rules that should be put in place for crimes that did do this, that did kill that many people, that did hurt so many people. And it will have to just be that the people live with the emotional impact that the executing will never go away. The fact mm-hmm. that someone lost okay. their life will never go away. And yes, there will be some times where, oh, they have made this decision and they impacted someone else's life, but they had to make a decision. They couldn't back away. They couldn't stay neutral, right? Mm-hmm. They had to take the chance. No matter what decision you make, there's always going to be a pro and a con. And I think that's just part of the death penalty, and okay. you have to move forward.
Okay, well, you know, I'm just throwing it out there because there, you know, there are various conditions that we need to consider. Okay, and I'm just throwing those out there for us to consider. Let me share this. According to the Floridians for Alternatives to Death Penalty, the death penalty costs Florida taxpayers $51 million per year, beyond what it would they spend if they get life in prison. So does that influence anything? Think about it. We're at that time where we need to take a break. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour we are examining Florida's death penalty. And there are a number of various positions that people have taken. Do you feel, I'm going to throw this out here, do you feel, some people say there has to be some closure, okay? We must have closure on this. Do you feel that closure is a valid justification for capital punishment? I mean, I'm throwing that one out. And do you think that punishment is about retribution, deterrence, or public safety? Research has indicated that it's not about deterrence. Because when individuals are committing crimes, the fact that they might get the death penalty does not seem to have an impact. All right, I'd like to hear from you. What do you think? Let's start with, Shahasra.
I kind of think that closure, personally, I think that closure might be like a justifiable reason for the death penalty to exist. Like, of course, in some people's eyes, especially if those people are also, you know, very heavily sympathetic to the victim's situation or like the victim's family, even, you know, it would be a justifiable way for those people to receive closure. But it also just ties back to, since the death penalty is just such a sensitive topic, it seems as if like it is justifiable in that circumstance if the person who had committed that crime actually did something so heinous. And also just the fact that it's more expensive for the death penalty to happen than for there to be a life sentence is just so insane to me.
Okay. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, well, the reason that the death penalty is so expensive is because there's so much to the process that it mm-hmm. takes so long. And when it comes to that, it just all goes down to the morals of people and what they believe justice should be. And also how far the person who committed the crime went to commit the crime. Did they do it in one quick step, or did this take years of planning? And every step of the way, was this something that they meant to do? I feel is also a factor that adds in because it's more of the motive rather than the crime itself for closure, because closure relies on why the person did it rather than the fact that they just did it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. Does everybody understand where she's coming from about closure? Some folks say just say we need to get some closure on this in this situation, and the way you get this closure is to execute the individual. And then the families can move on, and the individual is gone.
Yes, because, sorry, for the motive, it's like some people don't show any remorse because their motive was so strong. They knew what they were doing the entire time. Some people do show remorse because they had no intention of what they were doing. They just did it in a quick thought.
And some people are able to just be poker face and don't have any, I mean, you're right. You would think the individual would express remorse, but is that something that we really need to seriously consider? What if they're mentally ill? Some mentally ill individuals don't show remorse at all. I'm just throwing these out here, just because it's no simple ease. It's no simple question, and there are a number of different variables. But I just wanted you all to think about them because we come up. It sounds so quick and easy, but it's not really quick and easy. I mean, what does it say? What does it mean for public trust when an innocent individual has been sentenced to death? Because once it's death, that's over. What does that mean? What does that say? What about the racial and the geographic disparities that exist? What does that say? They're already saying, now there's a big difference with people of color and white and who's the victim. That's not just them crying wolf, that's the truth. So, I mean, you got to put out, and it's not easy. I don't expect you all to have the answer, but just exploring where you sit and what you think. Another thing to throw out there to you, and then I'll get your responses, is research has indicated that youth tend to oppose the death penalty more than older generations. Why do you think that occurs? That's enough. I've thrown enough out there for us to respond to. So let me hear from some of you. What do you think on any
So
of those?
for that, I feel like it's just because of how they were brought up and how they were educated and their upbringing. Because as many people know, like even for something like their political identity or just like how they act and their mannerisms and all that stuff, it's because of how they were raised and how like the situations that they grew up in. So say somebody with a educated background would lean more to something that they're educated in. So say somebody knows more about the death penalty than the other people because they've studied about it, they've researched about it, then they have more of an option to choose whether they believe is the right thing to do. And for I feel like for the younger generation, I'm somebody that believes the death penalty can be necessary at times, but not always. And so with that, I think it's just how people are just taught and what they think. Because nowadays there's a lot of I would say there's a lot, I don't know about back then because I wasn't obviously not born there or anything like that. But now there's more, I would say more people are like involved in stuff like these. Because many people, I'm gonna keep on saying that I don't know what happened back then. But nowadays there's a lot of people involved in gun violence, suicide prevention, and all that stuff because they're educated on it. And it's maybe because of the situation they've been in or the situations that other people have been in that they've been okay and willing to
provide their opinion on. And for the death penalty, I feel like after, many people are looking at the sides where they are more, feel more responsive to. So many kids and many of the younger generation would say no because of what they believe, like what situations they've been in and how, not necessarily how, like what they've done, but it's more like they say no because they've researched about it or they've read about it or stuff like that.
Okay. Other comments?
All right. Okay, where do I start? You brought up a lot of good points and a lot of good questions. I think I was going to start with the closure issue.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the thing about closure is that it's not like a set definition. And like closure can be different for different families, indeed, different people. And it's not like a one word answer, or it's not like a one solution type of thing. Because the thing about closure is that even if the prisoner gets executed, there can still be a lack of closure on the issue. And this can be something that it just remains unsolved for the rest of the family's lives. And the thing about what you brought up, I think this was interesting, how it's actually more expensive to conduct the death penalty than to keep the life sentence. I did not know that. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I did too.
That provides a different perspective on the issue. So like I feel like a lot of people assume that keeping inmates on life sentences is actually more expensive, hence why they tend to lean more towards a death penalty. And like for that reason, they tend to choose the death penalty over life sentences. But yeah, overall, it's pretty confusing.
It's hard.
Too many layers to this.
Yeah, and that's that's just what I wanted to convey, that there are so many variables that play into this. The crime itself, the color of the victim, race of the victim, the race of the perpetrator. You know, and here we're finding in Florida, not only that, but what county you live in.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I found that was kind of, when I was doing the research for it, I was like, what county you live in determines it. There's just so many things that contribute to it. But anyhow, let me hear from somebody else.
Yeah, and to address the race issue, I think, like, since we already have established that the judicial system does not, like, sometimes cases get jumbled up and they don't really get handled properly, like, the fact that it's also from racial judgment is so insane. And I think that another, like, reason why racial justice is rooted within the jury pool, since all the cases where they're actually bringing up death penalty has got to be high profile if they're even thinking of mentioning it in the first place. Like, the jury has to have a thorough background check and ensure that, you know, like, racial bias is left as far out of the picture as possible, because we want to avoid that, like, death penalty happening for just all efficiency, you know, like, even from a financial standpoint.
And I also think that when we talk about the cost of it, like, I understand the mindset of, oh, yeah, they don't even deserve to, like, have a lot of resources put into it. But I think a lot of it also stems from people think that it's going to make them feel better. Like, when we talk about, oh, yeah, it's to, I don't know, make the victims feel better afterwards. But I don't necessarily think that that's true. Like, when I think about the victims, I think what they really want is for that person to understand that they did something wrong and feel bad about it. But I can't imagine that knowing that the man that did that to you is just, like, off the face of the earth. I'm not sure that would instantly bring relief, especially because if they're just gone, then you're taking away time for them, like, time that they could have used to actually think about what they did. And instead, you're just cutting them away from.
But then, like, the question is, can they be rehabilitated? What happens when one is in prison for life? I mean, that's just another question. If they're in prison for life, I guess they aren't really being rehabilitated. They're just there. I mean, that's an issue. That's a question. And, you know, I don't have an answer, but I'm just throwing that out there, too. That's something else to think about.
Something I wanted to throw out as well is that, like, maybe, like, going the habilitation route or the rehabilitation route, like, there's a chance where, like, the prisoner could, like, learn from their mistakes. And then I know, like, still staying on the life sentence, but, like, I've seen prisoners work, like, remote jobs, like, through computers nowadays. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe they could contribute something back to society, and that could be seen as, like, more positive. I know, like, with the closure issue, like, maybe the family of the victim still doesn't receive that closure that may come from death penalty, or may not come from death penalty. It's not always guaranteed. But at least, like, with the route of rehabilitation, there's that small chance of, like, that person still contributing something back to society. So I just wanted to bring up that point.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, again, there's a lot of different layers to this. Like, it's not a one solution thing.
And another one I'll throw out, we've only got a couple minutes though, is can a system with documented errors, okay, be ever trusted with executions? We're executing these people, but it's documented that there have been all these exonerations. So if that's the system, can we trust it? That's something else.
Okay. Yeah.
And are we playing God?
Essentially, the truth of the matter is that obviously you can't really trust it, but you have to use the document to your best ability in your judgment. Because if you think about it, even though there's a lot of facts and statements that might be true, everything about the death penalty is subjective. And there's also been a lot of race coming along with it, whether it may be racism or that some races just more likely to go into the death penalty. It's still that the truth of the matter is it's still subjective, and that you have to just trust what you can at the best of your ability, because at the end of the day, we are essentially playing God, if you think about it, because we are deciding the fate of this person for a crime that they have committed. And with that, you have to take into even more careful consideration of what you're doing. And because there are a lot of documented errors on somebody's case file or something like that, it's that we have to use whatever we can find to make sure that we are making the best decision for both the victim and for the victim, because they've faced probably horrible things because of the criminal. But we have to make sure that for the best ability, the jury has to make sure that they do what's right and that they're not making what could eventually be a decision that can be negatively affect the person if they were innocent, for example.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, with all the statistically proven, like, racial, sexual, and just bias in general, along with the costs, like the external costs of how much more it costs, like millions of dollars to do the death penalty compared to life sentence. And on top of that, rehabilitation, like, I don't know to what extent they promote rehabilitation in the life sentence. I don't know if they're just serving the life sentence or actively trying to do better. But I would say that it makes me question a little bit more of how, to what extent can the death penalty actually be not so error prone, because there's just so many layers of errors that kind of had been added today to the conversation. And it becomes like an ethical question at this point, to what extent is this
ethically correct, and to what extent are people doing it correctly? Because I know that there's a lot of
I have to interrupt.
And,
well, I want to say thank you for your comments. We are out of time. It doesn't seem like it's okay. It's many, many thanks to the Politics Wrap student producers and panelists. Today's conversation illustrates the insight of youth in making sense of complex and challenging world. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield saying thank you. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get to 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.